This is KCUR 89.3. Kansas City is well known for discriminatory housing policies that created a racially segregated city. The worst of the policies are in the past, but the impact of redlining, racial covenants, and blockbusting are not. KCUR's Michelle Tyrene Johnson explores how past housing discrimination contributed to the current black-white wealth gap.
Mary Louise Byrne lives in the Volcker neighborhood near KU Med Center. She can't quite remember what made her house stand out when she bought it in 1961.
I was married at the time. My son was 4. There's this really nifty ranch house over on Valentine Road. We wanted that, but it was $24,000.
They ended up buying the house that she still lives in now for $12,500. I asked Byrne if she knew how much Zillow listed her house for now.
No.
$190,000 plus.
Wow. They'd have to blast me out.
Byrne is white. When she bought her house, Troost Avenue was commonly known as the racial dividing line in Kansas City, Missouri. Byrne remembers viewing nice houses east of Troost, but never thought about how others had fewer options. Like Margaret May, who is black. May and her husband bought their first home in 1960 for about $9,000, a house on South Benton Avenue, east of Troost. Like most blacks in Kansas City looking for a home at the time, the Mays knew the deal.
There were parts of the city that would not sell properties to black people.
At the time, though, the neighborhood the May family moved into was almost all white. May thinks some blacks moved to other neighborhoods for the pursuit of better education after the 1954 Brown versus Topeka Board of Education desegregation case. That change also triggered white fear. Within 2 years, her almost all-white neighborhood was all black.
Literally, I'm told that a realtor would put a house up for sale, and if he could sell it to a black person, then he would go to the other houses on the block and said, you're going to need to move because black people are moving in.
This was before the 1968 Fair Housing Act, when that discriminatory tactic was common and called blockbusting. It contributed to the declining home values in black neighborhoods. For example, the home the Mays bought for $9,000 in 1960 was sold by them for about $70,000 in the late 1980s, but is now valued on Zillow at $40,000. UMKC urban planning professor Stephanie Frank explains.
Preying on fears, right? White people's prejudice and their fears of what's going to happen to their property values. So people would sell and then they would turn around and then sell it at a predatory rate to a black family.
Frank says blockbusting and racial covenants lay the groundwork for why Kansas City is considered by today's experts as not just segregated, but a hyper-segregated city. Redlining, too.
Redlining is the denial of mortgages or other loans to a spatial area, neighborhood, based on race. It's not on creditworthiness. It's not on your ability to pay. It is specifically blocking people from borrowing money based on the color of their skin.
Nationally, over time, discriminatory housing policies impacted the black-white wealth gap. Daniel Solomon researches race and ethnicity policy for Center for American Progress, a left-leaning think tank. She says home equity contributes to the accumulation of wealth in this country.
Today, black families have a wealth of $1 for every $10 white families own, and a lot of that is rooted in housing policy. So wealth is the measure of an individual or a family's like financial net worth.
Solomon's research connects the legally enforced racism of the past to the current circumstances of today.
You know, while redlining is no longer legal, it has lasting impact. Redlining, you know, prevented black families in the 60s and 70s to build real wealth.
Sam Shockley moved to Kansas City from the South in the 1950s. Even with a stint in the military and working two jobs at Ford Motor Company and at TWA, he knew he would face discrimination.
In Little Rock, it was out in the open. In fact, I was in the senior high school class, graduation class of 1957-58, when Central High School was integrated in Little Rock, Arkansas. So I've experienced overt discrimination. Here it was more covert.
Shockley had wanted his family to live closer to his jobs near the airport, but ultimately they weren't willing to chance it.
Having gone through the discrimination part, we were just leery, and we just didn't want to put our children through that, but we did want them to have a normal life.
Shockley said the highest priority of he and his wife was making sure that his three children got the best life they could provide, regardless of the color line. Their first home, east of Troost, was at 72nd and Norton and was almost $40,000 in 1970.
My salary and my ability to earn was equal with the white guys, but I just couldn't use it the same way.
As Kansas City goes through fits and starts of development, past housing discrimination policies may be gone, but not forgotten. They continue to pay in compound interest. For KCUR 89.3, this is Michelle Tyrene Johnson.